Good evening, Mrs. Norman. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm glad to hear you in our program. As your studies concern our region and particularly Armenia and surrounding country, I would like to ask you some questions, and especially, how do you assess current situation in South Caucasus?
Well, I think this is a very unique moment, actually. I mean, on the one hand, you have the possibility, really, of creating peace, which has, you know, not existed quite in this way for a long time, because as a result of what happened in Georgia in August of 2008, the world community are watching. There's a renewed interest and a renewed political will, I would say, to create peace in the South Caucasus, and people are pouring over it. However, there is equally the possibility that you could have renewed hostilities there. Particularly, I think the chances of that are increasing over the last, shall we say, 6 to 8 weeks. As Russia weakens economically, they may be looking for new levers to assert their importance in the region. So I think it's a double-edged sword now. It's a dangerous time. Possibility of great improvement, but equally possibility of rapid deterioration of the situation. So it depends to some extent on how the Azeri and Armenian governments are able to see through and above these situations at the moment, and whether or not they can reach above that to create a peace framework, which I would hope could, in that case, result in positive results maybe as soon as the end of this year.
We are hearing some analyses here and from other countries that the August war changed the landscape, political landscape in South Caucasus. So what's your opinion on that? How did the August war, what effect did it have on South Caucasus situation and particularly political situation?
What effect did it have? Well, I mean, as I say, for a number of years, we've been looking at the situation and saying that these frozen conflicts had the possibility to erupt or thaw violently at any moment. The international community was looking away because, to some extent, it was in their interest to play it down. As long as it was quiet, everybody was happy to invest in pipelines and move forward and try and pretend that things which were not resolved were resolved. Of course, they weren't, but never mind. The international community wasn't looking. So, I mean, it changed that. And this is something that we've been worried about for a long time, Russia, as the major power in the region, certainly has the potential to take a role there which could be destabilizing. So, I mean, it focused everyone on the area. And so, in a sense, it could have been a blow up in Karabakh. It wasn't. Instead, it occurred in Ossetia. But I would say, if anything, that means people are going to be more aware and more careful. So it created, I think, an opportunity now for peace, maybe in Karabakh, and certainly Turkey had been interested in operating as a mediator in the region before the August war. They were aware that tensions were rising. They were aware that this was essentially on their doorstep, and they were trying to take some kind of behind-the-scenes role long before August. So then, of course, they were ready when it all did blow up in August. They carried forward with those initiatives, and as you know all about, attempted some kind of rapprochement and to work more directly with Armenia towards opening the border with Turkey. So I think, you know, Turkey is now taking a much more active role. But again, you know, we have to be careful of what happens there.
Okay, so you talked about the Turkey's initiative, so I'm interested in your opinion. So what do you think, how will Turkey's stability and collaboration platform work as the current negotiations between Turkey and Armenia go on?
Right. Well, I mean, that's so far it's all very informal, these negotiations, but the that they exist at all, the fact that there's any kind of dialogue is extremely significant, I think. It's definitely in Armenia's interest, certainly, to work as closely as possible with Turkey. Now, how Russia views this, of course, Russia is part of the process, but I think it's very, very important that we remember that third parties, be it the U.S., be it Russia, be it France, are just that. They are third parties. And that the negotiations, of course, have to be really as direct as possible. It has to be what Armenia wants and what Turkey wants and what they can achieve for their joint prosperity in opening that border. Equally with Karabakh, again, it has to be direct between Azerbaijan and Armenia. You know, they must be careful of allowing third parties, however powerful they may be in the region, to sow any kind of seeds of dissent or hostility or suspicion, shall we say, because clearly it's going to be in everyone's interest in the South Caucasus if peace and prosperity can be established. There are good economic opportunities now, and it would be a shame if the people of Armenia and, of course, Azerbaijan too, and that region in Turkey are not able to benefit from this. Really, you have to look hard to find the positives in any possible peace solution and so on. That needs to be sold to the people. The benefits of compromise have to be sold. If I can add that the Azerbaijani government have not been good at this for... I'm not talking about the last 6 months, but certainly prior to that, I felt that what I was reading and hearing in the background in sort of diplomatic circles, political circles, and also amongst ordinary people was that there was suspicion being sown of, you know, creating any kind of peace agreement with Armenia. And I think that's very destructive because it's essential that they build on the possibility of cooperation and try and build trust.
So
they need to sell that to the people.
So taking into account the last developments around the Nagorno-Karabakh negotiations and the past and the previous rhetorics from Azeri side, and what do you think? What is the possibility of the resuming of the military operations in Nagorno-Karabakh?
Oh right, okay, military operations. Well, I mean, the danger does exist, certainly. There's no reason to believe that just because there was a war in Georgia that that there won't be another war in Karabakh. But I think that as I say, the world community is watching, so that's helpful. Now, what I am concerned about, and many people, of course, are as well, the possibility that a large shipment of arms was transferred into the region by Russia in 2008. And if that is the case, then Resolution 853, of course, UN Resolution, Security Council Resolution, would have been breached. This is a concern. And it's a concern because it means that there's a continuing militarization of the region. And that, of course, has to be stopped. The progress of that has to be stopped. And then after that, you can work on the peace process, but if there's continuing, support for military buildup in the region, then that is not going to get us any closer towards peace. So, cautious optimism on what may happen there. I don't know whether you have any further information on that.
You just did talk about the militarization of the region. Which country do you mean? You mean Armenia or Azerbaijan or other country in the region?
No, what I was saying was that there are reports that Russia actually supplied some $800 million worth of equipment into the region as late as 2008. Now, whether or not this is true, the Russians deny it, of course,
as I understand. But having said that, there does seem to be some evidence that this is the case. So increasing militarization is a worry. That certainly has to be stopped if there's going to be any headway made in the peace process. So again, you know, we have to be very careful now, because I think Russia at the moment is in the mood to flex its muscles throughout the Caucasus and in Central Asia too, in the areas of the near abroad and the far abroad, as they refer to it. And as Russia weakens economically, I think, strangely enough, the danger of that could become greater. I mean, ruble is going down, the price of commodities, oil, natural gas, these things are going down because of the world economic situation at the moment. And it could actually result in Russia looking for new ways of asserting itself and looking for new opportunities, shall we say, to assert its power in areas that could be of importance economically. For example, to retain stronghold monopoly over pipeline routes in the Caucasus. So, you know, there are dangers, certainly. And I think that these are things which the Armenian and the Azeri government...
So what about U.S.-Russian relations? What is your perspective? What perspectives do you see, and what do you wait from the development of U.S.-Russian relations?
Well, I mean, I think now that Obama is in power, there is a chance that things will warm up a little bit, and we are seeing signs of that. Certainly, Russia has softened its tone on missile defense, the missile deployment of missile defense systems in Poland and Czech Republic. So, you know, there are some good signs, possibly. Obama may be able to work with Putin in a more, Putin and Medvedev in a more constructive way than Bush was able to do. Bush's administration in the last few months of his administration, of course, in relations were, you know, worse than they had been for many, many years. So, you know, again, cautious optimism. This is a change time, so it's really difficult to say. Anything can happen. Very, very good things could happen, or very, very bad things could happen, and we just don't know yet. We can only watch and see. I hope that relations will warm up, but we'll see. Again, Russia may also realize that as they're situation weakens economically, that they have to be more conciliatory and work together with their foreign partners more. So we don't know. Russia could be tipped in either direction on that. Remains to be seen.
Thank you very much. And what effect will those Russian-U.S. relations have on South Caucasus, and especially on frozen conflicts, if they developed or if they worsen?
Well, I mean, let's hope they don't worsen. I mean, Russian and U.S. relations will certainly plummet to new lows if there is another war in the region. So let's try and not think the unthinkable. I think that we have to also, at the moment, be looking at what's going to happen again. It's all about pipelines. So what's going to happen with Nabucco? Unfortunately, Russia at the moment have a rather, I believe, strange view of what is in their interest. Clearly, it is in their interest to preside over peace and prosperity in the Caucasus. It's as if Russia is playing a 19th century game, I would say, in a 21st century world. Now, traditionally, the idea of a divide and conquer and using these regions as levers and also using them as a buffer zone, the Caucasus generally as a buffer zone, between themselves and Iran and Turkey, was, you know, they said this was a 19th century game. But the 21st century game should be quite different. And what I am hoping is that Russia will eventually realize that it is more than in their interest to see this region prosper and unify. So really what we have to hope for is that Turkey now being in a much stronger position
may be able to utilize that strength, that newfound diplomatic strength, that newfound strength to be able to try and create some kind of opening there between Armenia and Turkey itself, which could free up the region economically once there is a possibility of prosperity and people cooperating economically, then many other things will flow, including trust between people. So, you know, let's see what happens, and let's hope for the best.
Do you have any analysis about Barack Obama's future policy in South Caucasus? How will he treat this region?
Well, you know, it's tricky, because I have to say, I think Barack Obama's knowledge about the region is not very great. I mean, from that point of view, it is a good thing that he's remained on good terms with his former rival John McCain, because John McCain does have a much greater understanding of that region. He has people around him who are aware of what's going on, but I think he himself may not lead on this region as much as one would ideally like, because he knows less about it. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Samantha Power and what she knows about the region, and that she might be given an appointment and so on. What I would hope is that he will inform himself fully. One good bit of news, of course, is that I think Mrs. Clinton does take a strong interest in the Caspian Basin area, is going to make it a priority, does know what's going on there, and certainly Bill Clinton was very involved in the laying of the BTC pipeline and pushing that through, and knows a lot about what triggers different effects in that region. So, you know, let's see what happens. I hope he will inform himself. I hope he will make the region a priority, and he really should do, because this is a gateway to Europe. So it's absolutely essential. And as the Caucasus go, so too may Central Asia eventually. So it's very, very, very important strategically for the U.S. and the U.S.'s allies in Europe.
Mrs. Norman, you may have not known, but Barack Obama is famous for his advocacy to Armenian genocide issue, and some analysts predicted that if he becomes a president, he will do the best of him to pass this House Resolution 106. And in this case, what developments do you see with U.S.-Turkish relations?
Well, first of all, I don't see that there's going to be any serious change of the strategic relations between the U.S. and Turkey. I don't think that Resolution 106 is going to suddenly be passed. I'd be surprised. I really would be. Now, again, what a politician says when he is running for office, and the hard realities which emerge once he actually gains that office, are two different things. So whatever he may have said, I think that the political realities are such that I would personally be surprised if that resolution was suddenly passed. I would be. Now, as far as the Israeli, or not the not Israeli, I would say the Jewish lobby in the United States, there was some suggestion that as a result of what happened at Davos, they might take a more active role in this genocide issue and try and see if they could push it through. Again, I don't think so. And to be honest, I think at the moment the best thing for the region would be to leave the history to historians and to the archivists. I think at the moment it's very, very important to create some kind of balanced relationship there with Turkey, and that has to be the priority for the Armenian government and for the Azeri government, and really any other international player, United States, Russia, Iran even, whoever,
should be working towards that, because that's going to help people, the people of Armenia. There is a danger that when diaspora communities get involved, that even with all their good intentions, that the effects created are not the most desirable for the people of the mother country. I mean, and this is not simply true in Armenia. This was also, look at Northern Ireland, for example, the Irish diaspora community in the U.S. and the kind of effect that had. So I would be surprised if Barack Obama pushed on this issue at the moment. Turkey is very important to the U.S. now, and I think probably this issue will just be left to drop. I would think it will be left in suspense, shall we say.